252. These Englishmen are no race of philosophers. Bacon signifies an attack on the spirit of philosophy in general. Hobbes, Hume, and Locke have been a debasement and a devaluing of the idea of a philosopher for more than a century. Kant raised himself and rose up in reaction to Hume. It was Locke of whom Schelling could rightly say, "Je méprise Locke," I despise Locke. In the struggle with the English mechanistic dumbing down of the world, Hegel and Schopenhauer, along with Goethe, were unanimous. Both of these hostile fraternal geniuses in philosophy, who moved away from each other towards opposite poles of the German spirit, and in the process wronged each other, as only brothers can. What's lacking in England, and what has always been missing? That's something that semi-actor and rhetorician Carlyle understood well enough. A tasteless, muddle-headed man, who tried to conceal under his passionate grimaces what he understood about himself. That is what was lacking in Carlyle. A real power of spirituality, a real profundity of spiritual insight, in short, philosophy. It is characteristic of such an unphilosophical race that it clings strongly to Christianity. They need its discipline to develop their moralizing and humanizing. The Englishman is more gloomy, more sensual, stronger-willed, and more brutal than the German. And he is also, for that very reason, as the more vulgar of the two, also more pious than the German. He is even more in need of Christianity. For more refined nostrils, this same English Christianity has still a lingering and truly English smell of spleen and alcoholic dissipation, against which it is used for good reasons as a medicinal remedy, that is, the more delicate poison against the coarser one. Among crude people, a subtler poisoning is, in fact, already progress, a step towards spiritualization. English crudity and peasant seriousness is still most tolerably disguised, or stated more precisely, interpreted and given new meaning, by the language of Christian gestures and by prayers and singing psalms. And for those drunken and dissolute cattle who in earlier times learned to make moral grunts under the influence of Methodism, and more recently, once again, as the Salvation Army, a twitch of repentance may really be, relatively speaking, the highest achievement of humanity to which they can be raised. That much we can, in all fairness, concede. But what is still offensive, even in the most humane Englishman, is his lack of music, speaking metaphorically, and not metaphorically. He has, in the movements of his soul and his body, no rhythm and dance. In fact, not even the desire for rhythm and dance, for music. Listen to him speak, or watch the most beautiful English woman walk. In no country of the earth are there lovelier doves and swans. And finally, listen to them sing. But I'm demanding too much. 253. There are truths which are best recognized by mediocre heads, because they are the most appropriate for them. There are truths which have charm and seductive power only for mediocre minds. At this very point, we are pushed back onto this perhaps unpleasant proposition. Since the time the spirit of respectable but mediocre Englishmen, I cite Darwin, John Stuart Mill, and Herbert Spencer, has succeeded in gaining preeminence in the middle regions of European taste. In fact, who could doubt how useful it is that such spirits rule for a while? It would be a mistake to think that highly cultivated spirits who fly off to great distances would be particularly skillful at establishing many small, common facts, collecting them, and pushing to a conclusion. They are, by contrast, as exceptional men, from the very start in no advantageous position vis-à-vis the rules. And finally, they have more to do than merely to have knowledge, for they have to be something new, to mean something new, to present new values. The gap between know and can is perhaps greater as well as more mysterious than people think. It's possible the man who can act in the grand style, the creating man, will have to be a man who does not know, whereas, on the other hand, for scientific discoveries of the sort Darwin made, a certain narrowness, aridity, and diligent carefulness, in short, something English, may not make a bad disposition. And finally, we should not forget that the English, with their profoundly average quality, have already once brought about a collective depression of the European spirit. What people call modern ideas, or the ideas of the 18th century, or even French ideas. In other words, what the German spirit has risen against with a deep disgust were English in origin. There's no doubt of that. The French have been only apes and actors of these ideas, their best soldiers as well, and at the same time, unfortunately, their first and most complete victims. For with the damnable Anglomania of modern ideas, the âme française, French soul, has finally become so thin and emaciated that nowadays we remember almost with disbelief its 16th and 17th centuries, its profoundly passionate power, its resourceful nobility. But with our teeth we must hang on to the following principle of historical fairness and defend it against the appearance of the moment. European noblesse in feeling, in taste, in customs, in short, the word taken in every higher sense, is the work and invention of France. European nastiness, the plebeian quality of modern ideas, the work of England.